To Indiana Sports Beat Radio.
So for the thousands in attendance and the millions watching around the world, it's time!
Three on the way. Oh! Elian! Elian! And Indiana wins the ball game!
Know your role and shut your mouth, you jabroni!
Float game for the win! Is gone. Goodbye. Touchdown, Indy. Woo! IU. America. They got a football team now.
It's pretty simple. I win. Google me.
You know that I'm the cream of the crop.
Oh. Now, here's Jim Coyle.
Hello, everybody. Welcome aboard another day, another dollar. Happy Tuesday. Jim Coyle with you as always, and Coach Griff at the Stern. Hope your week has started out well. We clean off the camera a little bit there. Oh, wow. That made a big difference. I should have left that alone. A lot better with a big smudge on it, Coach.
Well, it's been a day already, so when you have technical difficulties like I have, you want to pull your hair out.
Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday.
Tuesday, baby.
It is a Tuesday.
It's a Tuesday. Well, that's better than Monday.
Yeah.
And it gets you one step closer to Wednesday, which is the halfway point, and then it's all downhill from there.
Absolutely.
Let's see. Yesterday, Kurt Cignetti met with the media as he does each week during fall camp, each Monday, and actually throughout the football season. Will we have that?
We are going to have that at some point. I'll let you know when I get
that. All right. And then, of course, JD will join us. He's bringing along Jim Gordillo today. High school football starting this weekend. I know you're excited about that. Lots of great games going on all over the state, whether we're down talking about down in Evansville, where you can catch all your high school action on The Ref, 97.7 ESPN, The Ref, or, of course, in Bloomington on 98.7 WWZN, The Zone. The big game coming up this weekend in Bloomington with North and South. Opening the season. I mean, that's huge. But Mike DeCourcy, of course, joining us here in just a little bit as we're running a little bit behind. Just a shout out to Mike. looking forward to the start of the high school season this weekend up in the region. There'll be some great games as well. And, of course, in and all around Indianapolis, the Indianapolis area, tons of great games. But that's a big difference between high school and college. I just talked about North and South, Bloomington North and South playing this Friday. That's a huge game. That's one of their biggest games they'll play all year long, and they're starting the season with it. I don't think that I would want that as a player or coach personally, but I like to look forward to those games.
Yeah, I mean, you would rather, like you said, be at a different time period. But nowadays with high school football, they get pretty stringent with where they got to be at by the time they get to the sectionals and who they're playing in the conference. And it does get a little crazy at getting games scheduled. At least they can schedule now two games outside of their conference, which makes it a lot better. So you do see some teams playing, you know, like up here north, we'll have Fort Wayne teams play Indy teams, which is good because they'll end up playing in the playoffs at some point. So it does make it better for that aspect of things, because it used to be they would just hit the conference and play, you know, nine games of conference games and that was it. But now you get the chance to bring in the other teams from other areas. So it makes for a good first couple of weeks of football.
So it's kind of like the college conferences crossing over and playing each other a little bit.
Yeah, I'd say that's a good way to put it. I would agree. You're correct. It's like the Big Ten going to play the ACC or the SEC.
Well, Absolutely looking forward to all of that and looking forward to the season getting started. But, of course, with the season starting sooner, it will end sooner, especially with them only playing, what, 9 regular season games?
They play 9, and then they're guaranteed a 10th game with the sectionals.
So that's 2.5 months. Bam.
Yeah, it goes quick. It goes quick. Yeah,
that's much faster than it should be, and that's faster than it was when I was in high school. And I would hate that. I mean, you practice all that time. You put all that energy and effort into it, and then it goes in 2.5 months. Poof. It's gone. Or it can be gone.
Yeah. Well, it's like I said, it's football's a different breed, you know, especially if you only play 10 games. I mean, that's the craziness. And just think now with college football, they're playing 12, and then they got the college football playoffs like Indiana last year. They played 16, and some may argue that's too much.
Let's see. Kirk Cignetti met with the media yesterday. Like as I mentioned, we'll hear from him later. And as Brian pointing out, it's only 18 days away from the start of the college football season. Indiana is he's not shy about talking about their very positives, whether it's on the offensive line, although I don't know how deep they truly are there. They're really good there, but I don't know how deep they are there. Defensive line, of course, what are you going to say? Probably the best defensive line in the country. But on the offensive side, they're strong at wide receiver. They're deep at wide receiver again. And running back, they really hit the right, you know, Kobe Martin. You hate to see people get injured, but that injury is going to work in his, Lee Beebe's and IU's favor with him being injured and coming back. This really boosts, along with Turbo Richard. What a name that is. Turbo Richard. Now, that's the guy I would have thought would have come out in yellow cleats or gold cleats. In practice, would have been a turbo Richard.
Yeah, I would. No, you would think that
Dick Marsh. It was not Turbo.
Yeah, I mean, you would think that would be the one, but yeah, it's I think what Sig's feels good about with the offensive line for that matter is the develop of the young guys that are coming along at a clip that they feel is probably further than they would thought they had been. But again, I've come to the understanding when Bosted's at the helm, don't ever doubt what he can or can't get ready, regardless of what year they are, because he has a unique ability to get kids ready to play right away. I mean, look at Ajani last year. I mean, he came on out of nowhere and became a critical part of that offensive line. So I don't dare doubt what they can put together. I was concerned like you were, but I do feel like with Sig sitting there really confident where they're at, then I got to feel they feel pretty good that their depth at offensive line is not an issue.
The AP poll came out as well, the preseason AP poll, Ohio State at the top, followed by Oregon, the big two, man. Indiana's the little three, they're down in six, but Georgia, of course, from the SEC, and of course, Notre Dame. Isn't it requirement now that Notre Dame is just voted into the top 5 along with Texas?
There you go.
Who's done nothing. Texas, who's done nothing. They keep saying, maybe it's like they just think if they keep hoping, just keep voting Texas up there, they'll do something. And I have not seen that be the case yet. If they keep voting and predicting that Arch Manning is going to be the Heisman Trophy winner, maybe it'll come to fruition. It's just like, man, it just cracks me up.
Yeah, well, I do have a something I'll pull up, maybe when Mike comes on, that I pulled the who voted for who in this AP poll.
Oh, yeah. I love those. And, but
we'll see. But well, it is. It's too early. But it was funny because when I went and looked at it, there's guys that actually had Indiana as low as 9 or 10 in their votes.
Well, I mean, there are people that if you don't cover a team, you don't know as much. I get that sure. because there's truth about that with teams throughout there. For me, I know that Notre Dame is very – they're probably worthy of that ranking. Texas is because they're supposed to be that good. And, well, they haven't been. So, why don't you let them get there? But Miami, I agree with that. I think Ole Miss is overrated, personally. I think they lose to LSU this year, which is they're just a couple spots behind them. Let's see. Michigan, I think Michigan is overrated. They haven't done anything. They've got a quarterback that hasn't done anything. Yeah, I'll leave that alone with the rest there. There's the obligatory Iowa and in the around the 22nd spot. So let's go ahead and take a break. We'll get Mike in here and talk about all this noise.
All right.
He brings the common sense, level-headed mentality to the situation where I like to get off onto the fringes.
Yeah. I'll take his, like I said, we'll be the students today.
Well, I'm always a student when he's on. We've got lots more coming up here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Mike DeCourcy joins us next, back with plenty more right after these messages. Welcome back, Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Jim Coyle with you, Coach Griff at the helm, and the great Mike DeCourcy from Fox and Big Ten Network joining us now, formerly sports writer, director, emeritus from the Sporting News. Emeritus. I like using that word. Emeritus.
Good morning, Jim. How are you today?
How are you, sir? How are you doing today?
I'm doing all right. How are you?
Great. Got Coach Griff along. We were just chipping away about the preseason poll. It was an AP poll. It's about like every other poll that's come out. I mean, they're all pretty similar. Everybody think has got Ohio State or most picked at the top. If not, they've got Oregon. So Big Ten looking to be tough again this year. That doesn't mean anything now because this is the preseason. Of course, I do expect both of those teams to be very good, but I also expect Georgia, Notre Dame, Texas, Miami, Oklahoma, those, LSU. I think there's going to be so many good teams. Now, I think Michigan is overranked by being in the top 20, period. They've done absolutely nothing besides hire a good coach for the first time in a while, which can matter. Ask Indiana fans. It can make a difference. Yeah, it can make a difference. But I think that they're overranked. I think it's time for USC to do it. And then, you know, Penn State. A lot of people might be surprised to see Penn State up there. I'm not. I think that they have the dudes, and they have a hell of a new coach in Matt Campbell. I think that they kind of – I'm not going to say that they're going to jump back into the top five. Maybe they do. But I think that they're going to be a worthy top 20 team this year.
I'm interested that you completely ignored number 11.
Oh, LSU?
Yeah.
I think that they're better than Ole Miss.
That's interesting.
I think that they're a top 10. I think they'll end up being a top 10 team.
Somehow we will see. As five.
I am not the biggest fan of Lane Kiffin. I don't like the way he comports himself. I think the way he runs his programs is less precise than one would prefer. So we'll see whether or not. But, I mean, Ole Miss has Chambliss back, and he proved to be an outstanding quarterback in the playoff last year, and I think that's a lot of why you see them as high as you do. Of all the teams, they are ranked more on that quarterback, that individual, than anyone else in the top 10, certainly. Although Texas' presence is sort of somewhat brand and a lot of Arch Manning as well.
Yeah, I agree, and it's going to be interesting because there's a lot of pressure on Lane Kiffin. They go back to Oxford to play Ole Miss. I know that because my daughter has had her tickets for quite some time. She's ready. And she's graduated and moved on. She'll be coming back from Houston, Texas for that game. And so she can't wait. Yeah, they've got that marked on the calendar, man. But that's great. That's one of the great things about college football. I love that stuff. That the buildup for that game will be awesome. The buildup for the Indiana-Ohio State game will be awesome. There's just going to be a lot of great games this year, as we've seen the last few years really ratchet up in fun in teams that are kind of coming off of the fringe and becoming mainstays like Washington. You've got Louisville there in the ACC, but Miami is the big dog there right now.
Yeah, I think it shows, the diversity of this top 25 in terms of conference affiliation, shows that although there are advantages to being in the SEC and Big Ten economically, it does not exclude others from having the ability to compete. It's up to them to compete. And this notion that has been advanced for nearly a year now by Cody Campbell and those who follow him, that it's an unfair advantage. I think that this poll is a demonstration that's preposterous, that it's not an unfair advantage, because not only did the SEC and Big Ten earn the economic advantages they have by building popularity, but they also have not built advantages that are impenetrable. I mean, a year ago, it was the Big Ten versus the ACC for the championship. It wasn't the Big Ten versus the SEC, or the Big Ten versus the Big Ten, or the SEC versus the SEC. It was the ACC that put the most competitive team on the field relative to the eventual champion. So I look at this poll and see what you would hope to see in terms of possibility for this season. And maybe somebody from the group of six, I guess it is now, jumps up. I think you will see someone jump up out of that group, maybe a couple of someones, and have spectacular years and be acknowledged later on. And of course, under the current structure, they'll be granted a bid. Whoever that team is will be granted a bid to make the eventual national championship playoff.
I'm surprised to see Utah make it up into there at 21 with the fact that their coach is no longer there.
It is a little bit of a surprise, because Whittingham had done such a beautiful job over there, and it seemed to be coach driven. Not that no one else has ever won there. I mean, one of his predecessors was Urban Meyer and had great success at Utah. So it's not that no one else can do it. It's just surprising, like you said, that they would expect it to continue automatically. I think that's an impressive statement on behalf of the Utes.
The two Utes?
Not the Utes as referred to by Fred Gwynn in
My Cousin Vinny.
And My Cousin Vinny, but the Utah Utes.
The two Utes. The Utah Utes.
Here's an interesting thing with this poll, because I found this interesting too yesterday. First time in 65 years that the Big Ten has occupied 1 and 2 in the top poll. The last time it happened, I think it was like in 1961-ish, and it was Iowa and Ohio State were 1 and 2, if my memory serves me correct. So I found that very interesting in the storylines with that. And then this is, again, the first time that a defending national champion was outside of the top two in the vote.
Wow. First time since when?
It's like first time in 15 years that they have not, the defending national champion has not been 1-2
in the vote. That is interesting, but I think it says something about, and this is, I think that's, honestly, Coach, I think this is that's a product of the NIL era, because mm-hmm. Julian Sain, I think, would have had to stay anyway, but Dante Moore would not have stayed at Oregon 5 years ago. And so no. Oregon would not be number two if this were not this era where players can be highly compensated to continue their growth. And I think Moore needed another year, as talented as he is, to be ready for the NFL. And the current system allows him to be well compensated while he grows, as opposed to, I mean, you know, look right down the street there with Anthony Richardson 4 years ago or whatever it was. I think it was 4 years ago. He leaves Florida and he was ahead of schedule. And it's part of why it's either, hey, he's never going to develop into a top NFL quarterback, or it's going to take an extra long amount of time for him to make that break. Because he just wasn't ready for the NFL when he left Florida. Now Dante Moore can be 100% when he leaves Oregon. He's as ready as he can be. And that doesn't mean you're ready. The NFL's, I mean, it's tough.
Right, right.
But this, I think that's a great sign for football in general. I know the NFL gets frustrated by that because they'd like more talent to be available. But what they have to realize is that when they get that talent, that talent is ready to play in their league.
Yeah, some have argued that it's even better on the flip side, just like you said, to get that extra year because of the maturity factor, that when they get them, they're a little bit mature within their own in their own production, as opposed to coming out early and being really green and really not ready. The other unique thing about that, and I think you're absolutely correct, the top five, there's a lot in common with those top five. They all have a starting quarterback returning from last year. The only one in that group that I would disagree is a top quarterback is Gunnar Stockton at Georgia.
Right.
He's a tough kid. He plays to his ability, but he's not in the league of the other four kids that are on that board up there. So, but that was the other thing I thought of, is that they all have a top returning quarterback.
Yeah, I mean, you know, if you look at it, those teams, and I obviously you guys know about the Steelers and me. So, I mean, when the Steelers are looking for a quarterback in April, and they will be, it's a very good chance that they'll be trying to position themselves to get one of those four guys. They're all super talented, and of course, they have to continue their ascent. We've seen quarterbacks in the past that have taken steps back and it hasn't worked out. Usually it's about growth. And if you're genuinely talented, and I really believe in Moore in particular, I think that Arch has a chance to be great, but still has to work out some things with his throwing motion. I think he spent some of the offseason working on that. But Moore is just...
I hear he may have gone to the Manning Academy.
Yeah, you would think. Yes, yes. But it's hard to believe that he got as far as he did with some of the things that he did with his throwing motion. I mean, given who he grew up around, a grandfather who was one of the greats of all time, a couple of uncles who won a combined four Super Bowls, you'd have thought that he would have a little bit more fluid motion by the time he'd played multiple college seasons. But I think that this year you'll see a better Arch. And so but Moore just needs to get a little bit older and a little bit stronger. And Sayan, I think, just needs to prove that 1 year wasn't it. You know, it wasn't a 1 year wonder kind of thing, that he's legit, A, and B, that he can go out now and win those games that he was unable to win in his first season as a starter.
Yeah, and it's going to be, I think it's going to be an absolutely spectacular season in both the Big Tens and the SEC. The ACC, probably so. I mean, Miami is the lead dog there without question, but you've got some other teams that may bite a little bit. Louisville is always capable of winning games, especially some big games. We'll see who else. That's not the strongest conference. The Big 12, we'll see what they can come up with this year. But the Big 10 and the SEC are just going to be fun to watch. I mean, it's going to be a gravel grinder.
It is. You know, I mean, I one of the teams that's interesting to me on this list is SC, and you mentioned them earlier, Jim, that there's a lot of belief out in LA that this team is on the ascent, the program is on the ascent, that Lincoln Riley It took them a little while to get it together, but this is going to be the team that pushes SC back toward the top. And that's not reflected in these rankings, but there's a lot of belief out there. So you look at teams like that, then, you know, they're immediately followed by three more Big Ten teams on this list. And then, of course, the ones at the top and the Hoosiers. It's going to be a fascinating season in the Big Ten. And I'm a big believer that I know as people have discussed the possibility of a larger playoff, either 16 teams or 24 teams, that you should eliminate the conference final games, the conference championship games. I could not be more opposed to that concept. Though you need in today's college football, with teams of conferences of 18 teams in the Big Ten's case, 16 teams in the SEC's case, you absolutely need to have that game to establish the conference championship. I'm not Bo Schembechler here, who believed it all ended with the opportunity to play in the Rose Bowl, but I really believe the conference championship should matter. I believe automatic qualification should matter in whatever playoff system they devise. But I really believe in the conference championship game in these expanded conferences. Otherwise, you're just a television contract. And I don't want conferences to be that. I want them to be athletic competitions. And I think it should matter. And hey, when the Hoosiers won the Big Ten last December, you telling me that didn't matter to them? It didn't mean something? It was monumental for them. I would hate to see those games go away, and not least those because I attended probably 10 of them in Indy when I lived there, and when I lived in Cincy and would drive up, and they were great shows. I mean, they weren't always super competitive games because of the way it was structured, East West or Legends Leaders or whatever it was at the time, but the way it's structured now, where you get the top two teams in the league. I mean, those have been great games.
Without question. And I'm just looking forward to it all, man. I'm looking forward to a fun season. I'm not all jacked up about the pre-conference games. There are some, and I will enjoy them. But I'm looking forward to this season as a whole. And who does get better? Who are the better teams? Who does is it Ole Miss over LSU? But they've got a lot of other teams that are there lurking. Tennessee, I think Tennessee is the biggest farce. They've been the biggest farce because they've done absolutely nothing. Last year they were ranked in the top 25 all year, didn't beat a team with a winning record to my knowledge, much less a ranked team. The year before that, they go to Ohio State and the CFP and get absolutely obliterated. So Tennessee is, boy, there's just not, I'm like, anytime I hear noise coming from there, I'm like, yeah, you need to hush till you do something.
It is a nice place to go see a game though, Jim.
Oh, hey, right on the river there, babe.
It is beautiful. And I'll tell you what, if you ever are so inclined, not only is that day a lovely day, but then take the Sunday and drive over into the Smokies around late October. Unbelievable. My wife and I did that 30 some years ago and Peyton was still the quarterback, and I highly recommend it. But you're right. As a football program, the Vols have been there's been a lot of hat there and no cattle kind of thing. I guess that's an analogy I should use for Texas, but it came up.
That's perfect, though. That's dead on. That is certainly dead on. I could be used for anybody in the SEC. We'll save that for all. Florida, man, they've got a lot of pressure on them. Our buddy Cabro, look forward to talking to him. But, yeah, there's a lot of pressure in Florida to do something.
Of course. Absolutely. It's been a while since they have done anything. And that is a program. It just shows you that no matter what the name is on your helmet or the front of your jersey or whatever, that you have to execute. You have to hire the right people. The brand itself, especially now, but really ever, the brand doesn't do all the job. You have to get it done by hiring the right people. And that absolutely hasn't happened at Florida for a very long time. And they have not won at the rate that they expect as a result. And remember, like most of the players or a large number of the players that are populating all these other teams that are winning all these other games are coming from that state. They are flying over Gainesville to get to Bama or Georgia or even to Indiana or wherever. They're leaving the state. And that if I am a Florida fan or a Florida alum, I'm really frustrated by that.
Yeah, I wonder who's going to win more games this year, Florida or James Madison.
Well, James Madison's lost a couple of coaches in the last 3 years, so I'm not sure. It's a great program. Whether they replaced their coach adequately this time around, it's hard to get it right every single time. Xavier basketball did that for a long period of time, starting when Bob Stack left and they hired Pete Gillen and then Skip Prosser and Thad, et cetera, et cetera. But it's not easy to keep getting it right all those times in a row. And eventually you're going to stumble once.
Coach.
I'll tell you, why don't we take a break? Because I think we're already up against a break here, and then we can come back and talk some more with Mike. How about that?
That sounds like a winner.
All right. Hey, we'll be back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio alongside Mike DeCourcy. I'm the coach, Shannon Griffith, and Jim Coyle as well. How about the Pittsburgh Steelers preseason game there, Mr. DeCourcy? That was a pretty good showing by some of the backup QBs in that game. I thought they played well. And then we were talking yesterday about the number of Indiana Hoosiers that have basically crept up over the last few years that are in the NFL and being productive. Riley Nowakowski caught his first touchdown pass on Saturday, or that I think it was Saturday, but
Thursday.
You got to be Thursday. I'm sorry. I tell you, they played those games Thursday, yes. Friday, and Saturday, and I got confused because I was watching in front of the TV all weekend. But you got to, I mean, I thought the two kids behind that will be behind Rodgers played pretty well. I mean, that's going to be a pretty good competition to see who is going to be that next guy.
Yeah, they're talking a lot here in Pittsburgh now about the possibility of keeping four quarterbacks on the roster because they have no plans at all to release Drew Aller, especially after the performance that he showed on Thursday night. There's the immediate reaction. It's preseason football, and you're playing against – and he played the second half, so he's playing against guys who will not be in the NFL for the most part. However – he played a year ago and 2 years ago and 3 years ago at Penn State against guys who mostly won't be in the NFL. Right. He couldn't do any of the things
that he showed left.
Mm-hmm. For the Nittany Lions that he showed on Thursday night, precision, touch, feel, the throwing the ball in stride, not just getting it out and getting it to the guy in the general area where it could be caught, but where it could be caught and turned into something special. He was outstanding. And look, it's just a first step for him. He is a multi-year project for the Steelers. But there's no doubt he will be with them in some capacity. And they will not expose him to waivers. He was a third round pick.
Mm-hmm.
So the question is, can they keep four, or is there a competition, so to speak, between Mason Rudolph and Will Howard? And in reality, there's no competition there either. Because there's no doubt that Mason Rudolph is a superior backup quarterback in the NFL at this stage. The competition, I guess, is in the sense of, can Will Howard elevate himself to a level where they would be comfortable with him as the backup quarterback, and then they could trade Mason Rudolph for a fourth round pick or a fifth round pick, mm-hmm. or whatever it might bring? Or do they have to expose Howard to waivers and see whether anybody grabs him, and maybe they could stash him on the practice squad or keep all four. It's a challenging thought. Howard has not been, according to those who cover the team on a daily basis, had not been extraordinary in training camp, but he was quite good in that exhibition game, as you mentioned, Griff.
Mm-hmm. Well, you look at these three, they're, their completion percentages alone was remarkable. See, Aller was 10 of 13. He had 153 yards. He had the most yardage thrown. And then Rudolph was 10 of 11, near perfect. And then Will Howard was 7 and 9. So they combined for 27 of 33 for 332 yards. Now, I don't know if that's just says that they're that good of quarterbacks, or is that Green Bay depth and defense is really bad, because that's a lot of yard. That's a lot of yardage in a game one of preseason. You usually don't see that many yards exposed in the passing game, just because it's the first time and you got different bodies out there. But I thought that bode well for Pittsburgh's question mark about who that guy is, because they have been playing. I mean, there's always been a question, I think, who is the guy or the heir apparent potentially to Rodgers, because he's done after this year, supposedly.
Right.
He's supposedly done this year.
He's been pretty emphatic about it this time around. Last year, he was nebulous, never really committed one way or the other. I don't think he knew what he wanted to do at that point, but he had... I think he understands that this is about all he's got left, if indeed mm-hmm. he has this left. We still don't know for sure. But this is all he's got left, and he will not return for 2027. So he's got – so they have to find a path forward. And I don't know what that is. I don't know if it's a another short-term signing while they draft. As I mentioned in the prior segment, they're going to draft a quarterback early next year. They have to. It's just a question of finding the right player. Is he one of the ones that we mentioned? Can they get positioned to draft that player? Can they make a trade to get into position to draft one of those players? Remember, it doesn't have to be the one. I mean, Patrick Mahomes was number 10. They got the one they wanted. Josh Allen, I think, went 7. It doesn't have to be the first pick. And if you go back, if I remember correctly, in whatever year they came out, Tua Tagovailoa was taken ahead of Justin Herbert. I think it was 4 and 5, if I remember right. And so it's really about getting the right guy, not getting the first guy.
Well, right. And then the talent level that you get to choose from, of college quarterbacks, depending on what year it is, of course, but there seems to be a pretty good deep pool of draftable quarterbacks as well as free agents, you know, because, you know, some may not draft them and they may, you know, pick up a pretty good, you know, free agent signing. But it seems to me that's a position over the last few years that it's been a very deep pool of draft picks. And like you said, they find the one that they want, or they feel that they gives them the best of, you know, the both worlds. Now, Minnesota might not feel that way now with JJ McCarthy, because that's become I don't know what's going on there, but that one shocked me with them bringing in Murray and then naming him the starter. I don't know what has transpired there, because that was a weird setup for me. Because it was all in on JJ McCarthy, and then something happened between the end of the season and then picking up Kyler Murray, and then all of a sudden him becoming the guy. Did you find that weird?
Well, the whole thing has been weird from winning 14 games, and yeah, they flamed out in the playoffs, but they won 14 games with Sam Darnold, and then just said bye. We got JJ McCarthy. It's like, okay, really? You think that's the way to go after winning 14 games? See, I think in general that the challenge of winning in the NFL regular season is underrated. I see it here in Pittsburgh all the time. The number of consecutive seasons that they had under Mike Tomlin without having a losing record, the number of times they made the playoffs over the past decade or so without winning a game, it's mocked here. It's like, yeah, but a lot of teams didn't make the playoffs at all. It's hard to get there. It's hard to win a regular season NFL game. It's not easy to do. And the Vikings won 14 and then thought, we could do better. That was a pretty bold and in the end, arrogant statement, Coach. And they are paying dearly for it. It'll be interesting to see whether they can do anything with Kyler Murray, because Murray in Arizona – Arizona's not a great winning culture to start with, and he certainly didn't contribute anything to turning it into one. He was often loose with how he operated, and it was never really a positive forward type of momentum for the Cardinals. And now the Vikings are trusting him entirely with their franchise. You know, I wish him good luck. They're in the NFC, mm-hmm. so they're not going to hit back Pittsburgh at all for for a long time. But I don't understand anything really that's happened in that franchise for about the last 3 years.
Yeah, it's been like almost self-sabotaging.
Yeah,
I mean, again, I Kyler Murray is a good, phenomenal athlete. I take mm-hmm. nothing away from there, but in my opinion, I don't think he's an NFL quarterback. I just don't think he has the size it's hard for them to find a design, a NFL type of playbook around him because of his size. You know, he's not a drop back guy. You got to be in the gun. So there's a lot of things there, but when they made that move, I was just kind of scratching my head. But anyway, but I tell you, the other thing that you're going to have in Pittsburgh this year, and I was watching some of the game, and this kid's going to be, I think, an exciting player to watch in Pittsburgh, is Wejet, the kid from Iowa, the returner, because he can flat out fly. And, you know, I guess the question there, does Rodgers have a deep threat on, you know, in his wide receiver core? I know that one kid that I always follow, because he's from Fort Wayne and he was in school with my son and at Homestead High School, was Ben Skronik. And I love the kid, the Ben Skronik kid. He's just a tough as nails kid and works hard. And it sounds like he's going to, you know, stay around for a little longer. But I was looking at their wide receiver room and I'm like, who is that guy that is going to be that vertical threat for them? Do you feel like they've got a guy that
DK Metcalf? I mean, that's okay. He is not a true burner, but he can go a little bit. He's got excellent hands and he can turn he has the ability to turn a slant into a touchdown. For instance, he did it a year ago. He's not the fastest guy in the league, but I think that he's probably the closest they have. Cause then from there it's Pittman, who they traded with the Colts to get. Jeremy Bernard is a rookie who's considered to be more of an intermediate type receiver, a slot guy, not necessarily a deep threat. Roman Wilson is certainly not that. So they don't really have, they don't have that deep ball at threat. That's one of the things they'd hope to get in the draft in the first round. And they got hoodwinked in the draft process. They were behind Philadelphia, I believe. No, they were behind Dallas. They were behind Dallas. Dallas had the next pick, certainly doesn't need a wide receiver. The Steelers never thought that the Cowboys would trade with a division rival to make a division rival better, but they did. They lost out on the wide receiver who was their target. And they wound up having to draft Max Ihonatiore, an offensive lineman, because they lost out on the player that they wanted to get. So Mekhi Lemon. So it does happen sometimes that things in the NFL don't go your way, but you have to make the best of it.
Yeah, and but that Wejet kid, I loved him. I mean, when he's at Iowa, he just scared you to death that, you know, he's going to get loose on a kickoff return or punt return. He had a big play there the other night. He had a 74-yard one, you know, and that's what he does. I mean, he's one of those guys that he's kind of a explosive, get him in space and let him run. And I could see him being some type of threat in the underneath stuff or, you know, some of the things they could do with him. But what are you thinking is the biggest storyline for the Steelers heading into this season?
Offensive line, coach.
Yeah.
Because they have taken the right side of their offensive line, of a marginally successful offensive line, not a great one, but a marginally successful Mason McCormick, right guard, and Troy Faltano, right tackle, and have flipped them to the left side. And now they have a new right guard and a new right tackle. it'll probably end up being a Honichor, who I mentioned that was a draft pick, but right now he's not. He's still, they're treating him like still a rookie. And then Spencer Anderson, a seventh round pick from around 2023, is playing right guard. They've got a couple of options behind him, including a rookie from Iowa named Jennings Dunker, who I think they'd like eventually to take that job, whether it's this year or in the future. And then the only offensive lineman that's the same is their center, Zach Frazier. And so they need to have capable offensive line play, especially with, as we mentioned, a 42/43-year-old quarterback. They need to have great offensive line play, and they'll have essentially four new starters on that offensive line.
Yeah. I was just wondering that because that was the kind of thought I thought too with them. And of course you got to be able to protect the guy back there because he doesn't move all that well anymore. He doesn't move all that well. Well, I know that basketball is kind of a little ways off, but there just seems to be the little nuggets here and there. But when you look at the basketball season, because I know you're still going to be involved with the Big Ten and the bracketology and all that good stuff, what is this year, what is the biggest thing you're looking for in terms of what teams are getting back, maybe with these five-year guys that may pop back into the equation? Has that changed some dynamics with the national scene?
I think it will. It still is settling. There are still some guys that are out there that are hunting for teams. I mean, we saw last week Louisville add Seth Trimble, who's a very fine player at Carolina a year ago, and they found the room and money to add Seth Trimble to the Cardinals, and I think that will deepen their perimeter and make it more dynamic, make it more productive to go with. They had obviously invested heavily in Flory Badunga as their new center. So it'll be interesting to see what they're capable of doing at Louisville. But I think that we'll see more. I don't know how many Seth Trimbles there are out there, but there are still like Jackson Kohler, Big Ten. A very capable Big Ten player at Michigan State who is available. Kentucky, for instance, would be a team that would be really empowered by Jackson Kohler because they don't have the one thing this current Kentucky team doesn't have is great physicality. And Kohler would give them that along with another outstanding three-point weapon to go with Milan Momcilovic. That's one of the schools that's in the mix for him. I don't know if Michigan State has the space for him or whether he would want to go back there. But, gosh, I mean, Michigan State has a chance to be great. And he would have a chance to be a part of that. So the fifth-year thing is a mess. I haven't liked anything about the rule itself or how it was implemented. The guys at CBS, my friends at CBS, Matt Norlander, they do a poll every year of coaches. They call it Candid Coaches, and it's all anonymous, and they usually survey 50 to 100 coaches and ask them a series of questions about issues, and they ask them about the fifth-year thing, and it was about 56 to 44, I think, in favor of these guys getting that extra year. But there was a lot of criticism of the NCAA for how they executed the fifth year. And it could have been a lot more smooth. And I suspect there are some people who believe this from the beginning, and I am coming around to it, that it was introduced in June because they wanted a mess. They were trying to push this legislation in Congress, and so they wanted another mess to show how necessary it was to do it.
Well, you're muted there. I think you're muted if you're talking. I saw your break sign, so. Yeah. It's been a day. I'm telling you, the technology. Yeah, well, it's Mike, we appreciate you being here today. And we got to take a step aside and take another break and get back ready for the next hour of show. But have a great week, and we'll see you next week, buddy.
You guys too. Thanks.
All right, partner. Mike DeCourcy here with us today. We're going to be back with more Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Glad to have you along. I'm telling you, this has been a great day for technological problems, and I'm fighting it. But just had Mike DeCourcy on and talk to him a little bit. He's so knowledgeable. It's sometimes hard to break away from him with the knowledge he has and stuff. But again, we got some Coach Signetti's presser from yesterday. After his practice,
I keep losing my mic.
See, I'm telling you, it just kicked me out. So, I mean, it's a day, but I do have Coach Signetti's presser from yesterday. If we want to listen to that a little bit, it's about a 7-minute one, but you tell me when you're ready for it. I got it loaded up.
I think we're ready.
All right. Well, let's listen to the Coach Signetti, because he talks a little bit about the offensive line and some other positions. And
if he says on particular points when he's talking, we may want to stop it, talk about that particular point, and then go back to it.
Sure. Absolutely.
One of the challenges you said you faced kind of when you took over was establishing depth on a roster that you had to flip over and bring in 40 guys kind of 2+ years later. What do you feel like the depth is overall on the roster? I know obviously there's spots you probably want better, but overall, comparing this year, you know, to 2 years ago, depth-wise, where you're at?
Yeah, more depth this year for sure. But still, you know, there's areas where we have to develop players. And, you know, might be counting on some younger guys at certain spots to fill in depth.
I guess to sort of just follow up on that, you kind of had to maybe explore some of that depth along the offensive line in the spring because you had a couple guys out with sort of postseason things. Are there some guys that you feel like you've seen really carry over, some of those young guys that maybe got extra work, extra reps in the spring, carry that over to the fall?
Yeah, those young guys like a Johnny who's started a game or two and probably played in 5 to 7 games in competitive situations. You know, Libfried, Merrick, Wilkin, Simpson. True freshman has done a nice job. I'm probably forgetting somebody, but, you know, those are the guys probably the next in it right now.
Yeah, Coach, the scrimmage, your big takeaways, what you liked, what you didn't like, and did you come away healthy, the obvious question.
Like most first scrimmages, some good, bad, and ugly. Not quite as many penalties as there normally are or turnovers, but still a lot to clean up in terms of assignments and getting guys, you know, do what they're supposed to do.
Yeah, Kurt, what did you see in Yelly when you brought him in, and what are you hoping to get from him?
Yeah, really a tough guy that had explosive power and good movement, kind of a blue collar guy, and he'll be in the mix inside for sure.
Sammy in front of Mike. Coach, the linebackers behind Isaiah and Relijah, what does Jeff Utzinger and Caden Turner bring to this group?
Experience. They know what to do. They've played before. They're good special teams players as well. It's a competitive situation in terms of the third, fourth, and fifth linebacker right now. And, of course, in two tight ends, we like to play three linebackers. So Kellen White could figure into that mix as a linebacker against 12 personnel. But that's speculation yet because he hadn't been out there yet, you know, in 11-on-11.
Coach, when you were in the spring, you said the defense was a little bit ahead of the offense. Curious how that dynamic has kind of transitioned over into fall camp when you guys have gone good on good.
It's been back and forth, pretty good competition. They've both had their moments. The defense, one thing about the defense, because we're deep on the defensive line, when the twos go, we've got young linemen against older guys. But that's going to happen in season two if one of those guys have to step in. So it's been back and forth. But I'd give the defense the edge. But that's been pretty much the case every year I've been a head coach, since 19, I'd say, on. The defense has always been a little bit ahead of the offense.
Yeah, Daniel Duque stepped up quite a bit for you in the playoff last year, obviously with the circumstances, and now there's so much talent around him again on the defensive line. I guess, how is he, handling that situation now after, it really looked like this year could be an opportunity for him, and how is he standing out?
Well, everything's earned, not given. Competition's a great thing, and anybody that can play winning football is going to play. And one thing about Bryant, he's going to create packages to get people on the field to put the offense in conflict.
Before fall camp, you mentioned that there was a lot of work to be done. What specific areas have you seen the most progress so far?
I think as a team, we're making progress. Every practice is a little bit cleaner. Guys are coming closer to meeting the bar, play in, play out from an assignment effort standpoint, finishing plays, but still a way to go. We're not completely done with our installation. We still have a number of situations to practice before, the first game. But we're on track.
Nick Marshall, you spoke pretty highly of him at Big Ten Media Days. Just how have you seen him come into his own with the program and then just what he's done this fall?
Yeah, he's made some really nice plays in fall camp, made a great catch in the scrimmage. Big, long, strong guy. He's good after the catch. And, him and Becker are two long guys that have a good track record. And now it's kind of developing 3, 4, 5 in that receiver room.
With the center position, obviously, kind of Drew was there kind of in the spring. Now you had Bray. I mean, now after the first scrimmage, do you feel comfortable kind of moving forward with Bray? Or is it now do you kind of look back and forth? What was kind of the plan there now?
Bray's taken 90% of the reps with the ones at center. And Evans has played left guard. And so Bob's always moving guys around because you never have enough guys that can snap the ball. We've probably worked 4 or 5 different guys at the center position because you can't get a playoff if you can't snap the ball. But, Bray's done a really nice job and Drew's been playing left guard.
You said 3, 4, 5 receiver. I know you've got obviously Tyler Morris healthy, Chess Preston in. We saw a little bit of Davion Chandler and LeBron Bond last year. Just sort of who is maybe providing some of that depth behind those top two receiver in your mind right now?
Yeah, well, Tyler Morris had a family situation, so didn't scrimmage Saturday. I think Davion's made good progress here recently. He's got a lot of talent, can play inside and outside. Tyler Morris has certainly had his moments, can play inside and outside. After that, we've got to figure it out. Chaz Preston has talent, but he's got to be locked in assignment-wise and do the right thing, play in, play out. He can help us if he can do that. He missed the first 3 or 4 practices with a hip and he's gotten on the field recently. He's made some nice plays, but we've got to eliminate the MAs with him. LeBron Bond, Jackson Wasserstrom pretty much round out the group.
Given a kind of an update on kind of where they're at after one scrimmage, the one thing that I think is important that I took from that, and it's with the defense, because we've talked about their depth. They've got a lot of depth, especially up front. And the one thing that he said about that is, and I think Indiana does this really good, is taking the guys that they know that can play and developing packages to put them in a position to put the offense in conflict. And I think that's one thing that they did through last year, especially like when they went to Oregon, they jumped into a 3 linebacker set. They had shown that very little, but that did give Oregon something they weren't expecting, and it put the best guys on the field. And same thing will be this year because of what they'll have. Kellen Wyatt, he talked about they may move him back in that position. I do think that they have a lot of options on defense to put their best 11 out there at any one time, but have certain packages to the strength of guys, if that makes sense. You see what I'm saying there, Jim?
Oh, absolutely. And that's what you have to do. And you have to get to the point to get to the point. And that's they're building, man. I just love how you hear them. They're building. They're building from the top down. You fill in the spots that have to be filled in of importance. But then that depth piece is so important for Indiana still, because they haven't recruited per se the depth
automatically into place, where teams like Ohio State are still 2 and 3 deep. Mm-hmm. Indiana has that in some areas, as we saw last year on this defensive line, where they did go 2 and 3 deep. But offensive line is a little trickier, and it's been one of the problems for Indiana for years. But obviously, they've done a great job bringing in the right people in the last few years and keeping guys that could have left.
Yeah, and I think the one thing there, if I would say one area they'll probably hit hard in the portal this year will be offensive linemen because of that depth issue and what they're going to graduate, because it will leave a significant difference in experience because of what they have. But like I said, they feel confident with, even those guys are young, they only lack playing time, and they may get it pretty soon just because of what happens in college football. But he feels pretty confident with those kids that they've got in there now. And the one comment that watching the BTN stuff, they talked about the size of the offensive line being as good as they've ever seen an Indiana offensive line. They have big bodies that can move, and they're physical. And, you know, you take those outside of the observations because you're blind sometimes when you're around too much, and you see that they're on the right track with where they got offensive line.
Oh, absolutely. I think we saw that last year. And their ability to move guys around because they got nicked up last year. They got dinged up, and there was a time where they were really kind of stretched thin a little bit, but they were able to hang on and handle that situation, keep the quarterback clean, keep opening holes, and the train never really slowed down last year, although the offensive line, they took some dings.
Yeah, early on too. I mean, they lost some guys early on that forced their hand with like a Johnny and some of the other guys moving positions. But like Sig said, Bosted likes to use as many as 4 different guys at center for one simple reason. If you can't get a snap off, you're not going to be any good. And that's the truth about that. If you can't get a snap off to the quarterback, it's irrelevant what you got, because it's not going to work. But they rotate as many as 4 guys in there for that specific reason, to make sure they got the adequate depth of starting with that. So again, I just think that's how good Coach Bosted is in his craft with the offensive line and such. But I would say they're pretty happy. I think Sig's pretty happy overall with what they've got right now and where they're at. They got some guys they got to boost up a little bit, Preston, the kid from Tulane, and some other guys. But to me, he sounds pretty confident with what he's got. I don't know. Maybe
he's
just
very happy.
Yeah.
I think he's very happy. But what's not to like? He's got great position groups pretty much all the way around. And at the offensive line, at the running back's room, at the quarterback position, then across the way, please, he's got the best defense in all the country, definitely the best defensive line in the country. And a group of linebackers that are experienced and hardened. So, and some experience in that secondary that could, depending on how they play, could put Indiana right back on the same course that it was a season ago.
Yeah. And that's going to be the biggest thing for them, is being ready to go, because they're right there about the 1st of October. They start hitting it pretty hard with Ohio State, then Michigan. And so they're going to have to be playing their best ball, as we know, right when that period of time comes. And we'll see what happens with that. But we probably need to take
a break.
Yep, we're ready for a break. Sure. Go ahead, take us out, brother.
Well, we've got more coming up for you. J.D. Campbell will join. He's going to bring Jim Gordillo in from the Bloomington Herald. High school football coach is going to be jacked up about that, too. It starts Friday. That's what they're going to be talking about next on the other side.
Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio here on a Tuesday. Joining us now, J.D. Campbell. JD, before we get going, I just want to make a couple quick announcements. Don't forget the Never Lose Hoops golf outing is Thursday there in Bloomington. If you need any information at that, you can head over to jordanhalls.com and get all the information there for that day, as well as ways to contribute. And then, of course, don't forget the college pick'em is up on ESPN. Go to fantasy and you'll see a college pick'em. You can get in there to get all signed up as we get ready for college football season. But JD, it's high school football season time, and it's here.
It's high school football season. I'm last night in baseball. You know, I'm a baseball guy. White Sox and Cubs, Pete Crow Armstrong, boom, knocking it off. Last week we had the Field of Dreams Classic, Schwarber hitting a couple in the corner. I think Schwarber's hit more home runs and different things. I know if you ever get a chance to see his home run at Louisville over center field, that's amazing. And then this week we've got the Little League World Series. They'll have a really good game Sunday night. With the Brewers and the Braves in Williamsport. And then you look at the standings and teams that we thought 2 or 3 weeks ago that were dead to rights, like the Blue Jays and the Orioles, the Tigers, they're still in it. But,
yeah,
you know, what I do, Griff, through my years in sports, I always kind of put different levels of sports into different drink categories. I thought that the youth sports was always like water because most people need that every day. High school is like milk. You know, you go and everybody needs milk and you get a lot of people involved. You got people in the band and the cheerleaders and the fans and all that good stuff. And then college is like soda. So you got your Pepsis and you got your Cokes. All right. And then I always looked at the NFL as a good crisp Miller Lite or a Budweiser, or if you're really heavy on it, you can get a shot of Jack or Crown Royal. And that's how I always viewed sports. And it's a great time that we're seeing with regards to the excitement. Kids are starting to move in here in Bloomington. There's a little bit of a buzz. I'm teaching a class starting next week, so I went over before they came just to find out where my classroom was. But, you know, they've got Spirits and Traditions Friday. And that'll be a great time. But you know the excitement that's building. Of course, you survived the old two-a-days, which I'd love to hear about. If you've got, you know, talk about the two-a-days with the limited water and 98-degree heat, man. What was that like?
Well, back in the day, I guess you're correct. We did have that, especially in college, and we would – you know, we actually had 3 days. If you can imagine that, we would practice 3 times in different segments. So
I can tell you full-heartedly, it sucked.
No. You know what?
It sucked.
I think there was nothing more fun than, you know, in my world, than getting to go over to wherever the team was having lunch after morning practice and seeing the death on those guys' face, how tired they were, how physically tired those guys were. But it was a rite of passage, and I know obviously safety is much more important than, you know, things we didn't worry about back in the 60s, 70s, and 80s. Now they're much more careful on, but, oh, man, the smell of that locker room, you know.
And yeah, well,
sleep on the floor.
Yeah, it. The one thing I do think, and I think you said it correctly, it's not about the number of times you practice in a day; it's the quality of practices that you have. And I think in today's game, they have more quality practices because they do not have the fatigue factor, is what you mentioned, which would lead to, you know, muscle pulls and all types of things before the season starts. So I think teams are definitely more fresh when it comes to time to game time, even at the high school level, with what they've done in terms of implementing instruction throughout the year. A, we're getting better football. And on top of that, you're getting a lot of kids that are getting opportunities to get scholarships because they're getting the reps they need to get better. So it definitely has evolved into a better model. Although those days it was about survival and rite of passage, however you want to call it. But I look back on it now and thinking, man, we were stupid. You know, even coaching college, I mean, we were dumb because it's not about fatigue. It's about getting quality practices and getting kids ready to play to make sure they're fresh and ready to go.
You know, I moved to Indiana in the summer of 2007. And I've got a question for you because I grew up in Nevada and my sons were coming up, getting ready to play high school football in Ohio before we ended up coming here. And my oldest son played 4 years at South from 07 to 10. I got to ask you this. One of the things as a college guy that I wondered about, and maybe you can tell me why this is, why do they have JV games and freshman games on Saturdays as opposed to like where I had come from, where JV and freshmen were on Thursday nights or Monday nights? I always felt that that was a disservice to the college programs, just like they probably feel when college teams play on Friday. I just thought that it's different. Now, I'm sure there's some budget things, you know, buses and all that, but I'd like to get your take on that because I always felt that those kids that started playing a game at 9 a.m. or 10 a.m. might miss out on getting to Memorial Stadium at noon.
Yeah, it's I don't know what the big sense of it was or is, but in my day, like you said, the JV team in football played on Tuesday night and Thursday night was freshman. That was kind of how it went through the week. Why they've gone to more Saturday type of morning games. And I don't know if it's because of taking availability of weekends as opposed to school nights with those games. But I like the old way of doing it, but that's just me because I'm a little bit of a traditionalist in that respect. But I'm sure you're correct. Budget probably has a lot to do with it. Timing, you know, who and what. So, but we got Jim here. Let's go bring in Jim.
Oh yeah.
And then, hello, Jim. You can introduce him there, JD.
Jim, a longtime veteran of covering high school sports for the Bloomington Herald Times. What does your shirt say?
It's just whatever I threw on, just an IU shirt.
Oh, okay. I got my OG Ananobi. Still celebrating the tip.
There you go.
You know, but Jim, yeah. What I think, again, I got back into high school sports last year after a long, you know, obviously being at IU for as long as I was and then having my kids go to both South and North. I just think this is a unique thing. Friday night to have North and South play the season opener. I love it during football when you like even the college games that kind of like in, you know, I'm a basketball guy too, but like the Maui, you know, you want to see great matchups in the beginning. What do you think about this now that they're not in the same conference and they're going to play to open the season? What do you think the enthusiasm, what's it going to be like over there at North?
Oh yeah, I would think yeah, it'd be pretty high. I mean, you know, again with any rivalry, you know, when the teams are on more of an even footing, you know, that obviously helps. You know, and this is one of those cases where, you know, here you are, you know, South's got Gabe Johnson, you know, basically the longest tenured football coach in one school in our area. and a three-year starter at quarterback and a lot of veteran players. And then on the other hand, you know, North starting over again for the fourth year in a row, throwing a freshman quarterback out there and a lot of guys that are playing some bigger roles. I mean, they have some very good senior skill players that I think are going to play a big role in this game, but there's a lot of guys out there. This is going to be their first real, you know, taste of this. So it's, yeah, it's, there's a lot of unknowns because I guarantee you, you know, these first games, everyone's, especially, you know, the first quarter, first half, even teams are trying to work out all kinds of wrinkles and stuff. And now you got to come in and try to do that against, you know, your rival in front of, you know, in front of a crowd that's probably twice what it normally, you know, is for a game. I mean, so I'm expecting usually somewhere between 3,000 and 5,000 people show up, you know, for this game on a yearly basis. And so it does bring a little extra juice to that first week of practice, knowing that, you know, instead of playing Mooresville or instead of playing Columbus East or somewhere like that, boom, you know, you got the guys from across town coming into your place. But I think North's going to bring it. I mean, those guys want to come out and win that first game for Andy Harding. You know, if they can play like, you know, last year, Brett Cooper came in here and did a great job of kind of putting a chip on their shoulders and getting them to, I mean, they had, I don't know if anyone really expected them to have a season that they had last year. And then you look, they came within what, you know, a one quarter of knocking South out of the playoffs. So if they can bring that same kind of energy to this game, yeah, this could be a knockdown drag out to the end. Cause you know, South graduated what, 26 seniors. So there's going to be some new guys out there too. They don't have, I mean, and they sent how many, you know, players off to play college football last year, especially at the Division I level. So their talent level is, I don't want to say it's dropped off, but you know, that team was just absolutely loaded with athletes last year. And so this team's still pretty good, I think. But it's going to be interesting to see how a lot of, you know, when you're rebuilding your front lines on both sides of the ball, that's always a key to everything South does. So it'll be curious to see how all that plays out.
Well, it's funny you say 25 or 26 players. My son was a senior in 2010, and they finished the year with 30 kids. My son still has the poster here. My house calls them the Dirty 30 because of the attrition. They won one game all year in 2010, and it was at North. And I remember that game because it seemed like we were under a tornado warning at that time. You know, the storms, you could see them coming in, and and I don't know if we kept playing or they sent them to the locker rooms, but I just remember that. But how many North-South games have you seen in your day? And what, you know, what really stands out to you about just this intense rivalry? Because sometimes your team is good, sometimes it's bad, but when you play a rivalry game, anything can happen.
Yep. I came here in 2004, and of course back then, you know, we still had our full staff, so
yeah,
you know, Rex Kurtz was the South guy, and then after, I think about after a year, I kind of took over the North spot. So I think what we used to do back in the day is that when North and South would play, we would actually double team it. One of us would do the game story, and the other one would do like a feature on the other team. And, so I probably, you know, and then things changed a little bit, but I've probably seen at least a dozen or more, I'm sure more than that. Plus the playoff games, you know, times they've met in the playoffs. South, you know, North's gone through their ups and downs. You know, South's had a few lean years here and there, but you know, obviously, you look back at the record. You know, they've won a vast majority of these games, and so I think psychologically, they just got, you know, South just kind of walks into this game, you know, just with a different mental. I mean, that's the whole thing. Over the years, it's just been such a game for North that I feel like they have had to. They just get up for this game, and because it's such a big deal. Because they always feel like they're, you know, in an underdog mode most years. Because South is obviously here the last few years has been on a great run, and they've you know, especially with Mo Moriarty and obviously with Gabe Johnson picking that up. And so they really had the better of the series the last few years. And obviously, you know, South, for the most part, has been the team that's, you know, gotten through them in the playoffs when they've had to go. So, I mean, it's, yeah, I think it's just, I think that's one thing for North that they, like I said, when coming into this, it's, it can't be a be-all, end-all game, I guess. You know, it's a regular season game. It's an opener. It just has to be – I think South just, for the most part, they just kind of see it as another – when I talk to their kids, they just kind of see it as another conference game on their schedule, another chance to get better. And so I think they approach it that way, and they're a little more relaxed, a little more calm in what they're doing. So you got to be careful. You can't let your emotions kind of dictate, you know, what you do. You want to play with an edge, obviously. But I think it's important for North to come in and just play their game. And because that's a team that I guarantee you by week nine is going to be a lot better than they are in week one, because they've got a good coach there. It's just going to be a matter of figuring out what they do best. And, you know, especially what they don't have the numbers this year and don't have the size and are using a lot of two-way players. So it's going to be interesting to see how they're stamina and a lot of those things develop over the season.
Yeah, in fact, some of the guys that are involved in the baseball program are also involved in the football program. And you talked about the freshman quarterback, which I think is amazing, Fisher Pugh. You know, we had him a few times in the summer, and not very often at any level do you see a freshman start at quarterback on varsity. And what do you think? Now, are the changes in the conferences in full force right now? Are they both in different conferences this year?
North's in the Mid-State. South is a
independent.
Is an independent right now. Yeah, I got a story coming out on that about how Gabe kind of had to go fishing to get his schedule put together. He had six teams that stayed on the schedule from last year, so obviously. You know, they had to move because North's schedule now, the last seven games are all Mid-State games. So their only openings are week one, week two. And so that's where North and South, that's where they had the only option they had, because South wanted to keep playing Martinsville in week two, was to move the North-South game to week one. And so that's the first time since 1980 that they've played each other in the opener. I think 82 is the last time this hasn't been a conference game for them. And so, yeah, South will have those North and Martinsville. Terre Haute North decided to stay on the schedule. And then they still have Columbus North, Brebeuf Jesuit, and Center Grove stayed on there in weeks eight and nine for them. So they had to go out and try to find – first team he wound up founding, he started looking out of state, because, you know, it's one of those things when you're a 5A, 6A, even a 4A school, most of the schools outside are not independents. They're already locked into conferences by tradition, you know, because most of them have been around for so many years. And so this, obviously, it's a lot easier to be an independent if you're like a 1A, 2A schools, because of all the new programs that are constantly online. A lot of those smaller schools are not affiliated. So, yeah, he was starting to look in Kentucky and Ohio, and things didn't work out there. And then somehow he ran into somebody that had a friend on the staff of the Ironton, Ohio football program. And so that's how that game worked out. He was kind of hoping they'd come over here, but they needed a home game. And so he decided just to challenge his kids to put, you know, he's going to throw his kids on a bus and head over to Ohio. They're going to play a game at 3:00 on a Saturday afternoon, which will allow them to not have to do an overnight thing. They can come back home. And so that'll be kind of and I think for them this year, we were kind of talking, this whole thing is going to be kind of an adventure. You get to, you know, he says they usually draw about 10,000 people a game over there. It's a program that won the Ohio State, a state title in 2024, but they got put on probation for recruiting players over a number of years. And so I think they probably had some trouble finding people. And so that's why they had to reach out to Bloomington South. And then they had to do that. And then on either side of that, you know, they've got, they picked up Muncie Central and then Greenfield Central. Those are two teams that had openings earlier in the spring, but were kind of reluctant to I'll play Bloomington South. I know Greenfield is in the middle of, you know, the bad thing for them is now they have a four-game stretch where they're going to play Pendleton Heights, Yorktown, Bloomington South, and then New Pal. Back to back to back to back. Those are the four best teams by far in their schedule. And the Muncie Central's got a coach that's just in his second year there and got their first winning record in, I believe, 10 years. So they're kind of on the upswing. So I think those two teams will be able to give South some challenges. But yeah, it's going to be, you know, it's going to feel like a lot of these weeks like you're playing a playoff game because you're going up against somebody that's just a one-off game that you've never seen before. So I think they're going to have it's going to be an interesting schedule. And like you said, I think by the end of it, they're going to be pretty prepared for whatever comes down the pike playoff wise, at least until you get to semi state. And I'm not sure anyone in the state's prepared for New Pal. So,
Hey Jim, I know that you got the Bloomington area, but do you get down much toward with some of the Evansville or southern part of Indiana teams? Like, you know, I know Castle's always a good team, and you know, Evansville, Martyr Day, and those type of teams that are a little further south. What is some of your knowledge in that area? Because there's a lot of good high school football in those areas, and nobody really hears about those teams until they get up to the state area, you know, because they're so far down.
I haven't really had a chance to check. Usually I do try to check on, you know, Kyle Soakland, our writer down there at the Evansville paper. He's in our chain, so I'm able to kind of access his stuff, and I really haven't a chance to look at it yet. But you know, just based on last year and based on past history, yeah. I mean, obviously, Castle showing up in the top 10 poll, they always, you know, they're like Bloomington South. They always put something together every year, and it doesn't really seem to matter what sport it is. They just have a very, very great top to bottom athletic program, whether it's softball or, you know, checkers teams. They always compete in it. Evansville North, you know, I think is they obviously getting votes in the poll, so I think there's, you know, they're showing some promise there. They've got a good program in place. And you know, I guess the one team, the other one is going to be Floyd Central. You know, that was a team that I think they didn't expect to come up here and get frog stomped the way they did at a regional last year. And they're bringing a lot of guys back in that team. So, yeah, that's going to be interesting to see. At this point, it's probably too early to tell, but I think Castle is going to be interesting. I think Castle probably expected to win that sectional last year and didn't. So
yeah,
I think there's a couple of teams there that you know will have a little bit of a chip on their shoulders going into the playoffs, and be curious to see which one of them comes out of there, because right now it's up on this end, you know, South and North now are in a brand new sectional with Seymour and Franklin, and so I'm curious to see how Franklin kind of had a 500 year last year, but then like someone said. I was kind of going through there. They were three touchdowns away from being 7-3 instead of 5-5, or, you know, 8-3 instead of 5-5, whatever they ended up last year. So that's a program that's always got some athletes. I mean, shoot, they got a guy playing Major League Baseball right now in Max Clark with the Detroit Tigers. So, and that's the thing for the schedule. You look for North. I mean, North's going to be ready to go too. At the end of the year, the Mid-State Conference is going to prepare that football team every year for the playoffs as well. So, I mean, at least at the 5A level, I'm sure at the lower levels, I'm sure Modern Day is going to be Modern Day again. Gibson Southern.
Gibson Southern is another team. A lot
of the same old names down there, we're going to be looking for at the end of the year.
Yeah, Floyd Central's Steve Cooley, I think, is the head coach there now, and he's done a great job, you know, since he's moved over there. But, yeah, you know, there's some great high school football down in that area. Heritage Hills, you talked about. Gibson Southern, kind of where they've been in the last few years. Yeah. Modern Day is another traditional team, and I can't remember the last time they won the state, but it's not been too long ago that they were up at Indianapolis. So there's just a lot of good football down in that area, and, of course, high school football in Indiana has just, I think, taken off in the last few years in terms of the talent that's being put out in this state. And I'm talking P4 talent. And it's a pretty good spread from north to south, east to west of those type of kids. And I think a lot of it has to do with what they're able to do with kids now year round, as opposed to in my days when I was playing, you just had the summer you know, and you just had a short window. Well, now these guys are getting, you know, they're getting a spring session. They're getting all, and I think that's led to really good coaches in the state of Indiana, high school coaches. And you talked about Coach Mo and what his tradition is in high school football. And then, of course, the new, you know, the new kids on the block. But I just think high school football has just gotten a whole lot better in the state of Indiana here of late.
Yeah, I think some of it, I did a story on this last year. I think strength and conditioning programs. I think so many more schools are investing in those, not only in the equipment, but the knowledge as well, going out and getting guys. I mean, there, you know, how many schools now have strength and conditioning coaches? Yeah, you didn't see that 10 years ago.
No.
It was a football coach or some other, the PE coach or something that ran weightlifting. And now the, you know, the science of it's really starting to trickle down from the pros to the colleges. Now it's that's trickling into the high school level as well. And I think that's, you know, you see that with track. I mean, goodness sakes, you know, the records, especially like here in Bloomington, you know, whoever's, you know, the strength and conditioning here in Bloomington, you know, it's like, you know, the records that have been set the last few years are just absolutely incredible. And so that's, you know, that's the other area. I think you're really seeing it too, but yeah, it's, yeah, definitely for football. I think that's, you know, the kids are getting bigger, faster, stronger. Shoot, go look at Lincoln Getz over at Edgewood. That kid's put on probably about 30 pounds since last year, and it's all muscle. I mean, he is a 265-pound tree, and he's going to be a real stud for them. And not surprisingly, he's starting to, you know, the offers are starting to upswing now. He just, the latest one he got from Indiana State, so.
Well, hey, Jim, we appreciate you joining us. And JD, of course, once again, and great discussion there with high school football all starting this Friday night. And a lot of high school teams are being ready to go in the high school football season's upon us. So thanks for being with us.
Yep, no problem. Thanks, guys.
Thanks you, JD. Yep. Hey, we're going to step aside, take one more break. We'll come back, wrap things up with Indiana Sports Beat Radio right after these messages. Welcome back here to Indiana Sports Beat Radio on a Tuesday. Appreciate everyone being with us here today. Mike DeCourcy, of course, JD, thanks for coming by and spending some time here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio with myself and, of course, Mr. Cole. You know, I don't know if you saw this before. We got a couple minutes here before we have to wrap her up, but there is a new Heisman Hopefuls webpage that allows fans to vote for the Heisman Trophy, to cast their votes who they think the Heisman Trophy will be awarded to. And it goes everything from the quarterbacks, running backs. It'll have updated stats as the year goes on. And it's called hopefuls.heisman.com. But I thought that was an interesting thing to get the fans involved in a, I guess you could say, somewhat controversial subject matter when it comes to that, because it's become a quarterback, you know, for the most part, award. But it does give people the opportunity to go in and make their cast or votes as they go along. And I think they're going to tally it up at the end of the year to see what the fans thought and see how it relates to what actually happens.
Well, you know, those things that you do, a lot of the fantasy things, anything to keep people more involved. I know most people, the average person isn't involved in the minutia of the chat rooms, the message boards and things like that. But, you know, what you're building here in college football, you can really feel the momentum grow as this playoff system is evolving. And, you know, kind of like the March Madness, now this is what people always wanted during, you know, back in the day when you just waited after the Orange Bowl was over or the Sugar Bowl was over and you waited the next day for the votes to come out.
Right.
Now you've got, you know, and again, everybody, I mean, you want to talk about passion, man, oh man, the passionate fan with their teams. I mean, I think down south they're already boiling, you know, a bunch of crawdads and getting ready for that first week of football. And I know this, that once, you know, the Hoosiers open up, hey, Katie, bar the door, because the anticipation is to me, coming off a national championship, what more could you want? You know, and I think same thing with the Heisman, although I don't think we even know. I know a lot of people will talk about the receiver from Ohio State.
Jeremiah Smith.
But these things have a way of emerging out of nowhere, much like in basketball, Victor Oladipo being the National Player of the Year in 2013. We don't know. It's going to be fun. It's going to be fun. And I love Thursday night football, by the way. Mm-hmm. I love having those one-off games that the whole nation. And I can't wait for the NFL preseason to die. because if you watch those games, you don't even see guys that are going to be in the lineup or even make the team. And yet they still charge the same ticket prices as if you were going to a regular season NFL game. But the NFL rules right now. They can do what they want.
Well, yeah. But, no, I'm with you. I think that right now, to get the fans involved with whether it's the NFL, but mostly college now, it seems like they're really trying to encompass the entire college football fan and get them involved in certain aspects of the game. And I thought this was a very creative way to do that. And I know that not only just from a masterful aspect of things, but also when you look at college campuses are trying to get that aspect of things involved with their teams on campus. And I think Indiana is one of those teams that has caught lightning in the bottle with that, with what they've done with SIG over the last few years, getting him out to speak to the, you know, just the students and, you know, had a big event and doing that through the year. I just think that bodes well when you can involve the fan base, because that keeps them engaged. You know, it does. It gets us engaged when you talk about the season and things like that. But again, that's at hopefuls.heisman.com. And buddy, that's going to do it for us here today. So I really do appreciate you being here with us, and we'll see you next week.
All right, buddy. Take care.
All right. JD Campbell there with us. Appreciate everybody being with us here today on the Indiana Sports Beat Radio. We'll be back at it tomorrow. So come back and join us here on Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Have a good rest of your day.
Thanks for listening to Indiana Sports Beat Radio. Be sure to subscribe to our YouTube page for more clips and team coverage of Indiana basketball, football, and more. You can also find full episodes and tons of other content on thehoosier.com. We'll see you next time for another edition of Indiana Sports Beat Radio.